On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. So grateful you're joining us here today. You might be listening live in the Seattle area on 1150 AM KKNW. You might be listening live anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio. Or perhaps you're listening after the fact on ChristineUpchurch.com or one of the dozens of other places the podcast ends up. But I tell you, wherever and whenever you're joining us from, you're going to be really grateful you're here, because we're going to be talking about something which affects all of us. You know, what happens when things don't go right? Do you bounce back? But before I get into that, I want to say hello to the man behind all the technology who allows you to hear these wonderful conversations, Mr. Benny Mathers. Good morning, Benny.
Hey, and everything works perfectly here, so I don't have to work.
You don't?
No, it works perfect. I have to keep that mindset, though.
A well-oiled machine.
It should be, especially when I'm at the helm.
You always amaze me, Benny, at all the multitasking you can do.
Why, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Yes, well, thank you.
It's only for you, though.
Oh, somehow I don't quite buy that.
Come on, that was genuine.
Oh, you know, I think that the timing of the show today is divine, because I think there are many of us right now who are feeling like we could use a little resilience. We feel like we've been knocked down. And last week, I know at the very beginning of the show, I just spoke briefly to the fact that there are a lot of sexual assault victims, survivors, many of them very long-term survivors, who have been getting sort of their wounds exacerbated by what's been going on here in the United States, at least. And it's been a tough road for many. I know that there are many who are activated. I left everybody a message that's on the Facebook page from last week. I just want to reiterate, I stand beside you. But I'm really grateful of our guest today. We're going to be talking about resilience. And our guest today is Linda Graham. She is an experienced psychotherapist, and she integrates modern neuroscience. I love that. Mindfulness practices and relational psychology in her international trainings on resilience and well-being. She's a teacher. She trains the mental health professionals nationally and internationally in the neuroscience of resilience and other related topics. She teaches day-long, weekend, and week-long workshops in meditation, personal growth, and at wellness centers throughout the United States. And she's the author of Bouncing Back, which was a winner of 2013 Books for a Better Life Award, and her new book is called Resilience. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Linda Graham. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Christine, very much for having me. I'm really happy to be with you today.
You know, I think that people can sort of, I'm thinking of the Weebles Wobbles, because you're talking about wobble in your book, but it's sort of like sometimes life circumstances will knock us over, and sometimes they won't. And so, you know, this thing that you call resilience, can you please define what that is?
We usually talk about resilience as the capacities to face and deal with whatever challenges or crises we might be facing in our lives, and to have to bounce back from adversity, to be able to cope effectively and skillfully and adaptively is required of human beings, mm-hmm. because the pain and suffering and struggle is an inevitable part of being a human being. So I do talk about cultivating capacities of resilience to meet any level of disruption to our resilience, whether that's barely a wobble, you know, we mm-hmm. lose our car keys, but then we find them again quickly and we recover our resilience quickly.
Right.
To a serious struggle, a serious sorrow, a serious heartache, like many of the people watching the news these days are experiencing,
yes.
to really a full-blown tragedy or a full-blown trauma. where our capacities to cope are completely overwhelmed.
Yes.
So I see resilience as foundational. We need it to be able to meet any disappointment, any difficulty, any disaster in our lives and come back into our sense of well-being and thriving.
And it seems to me, Linda, that there are some people who can deal with, you know, that just the annoyances of life, the person who cuts you off on the freeway, the, you know, like not being able to find your car keys, breaking that vase that you so appreciated having, you know, as a hand-me-down, you know, whatever it is. And then there are others that are just like have a hard time dealing with the little things. What's going on when we're feeling kind of overwhelmed and out of sorts when just the little things are happening?
So the behavioral scientists talk about three factors that will predict someone's resilience. One is the severity of the external stressors. So it may be that we break a vase. It may be that our home is broken into. It may be that our marriage breaks up and we wind up in divorce.
Uh-huh.
So the severity of the stressor is a factor. The strength of our external resources. Do we have family and friends and community to turn to? Do we have financial savings in the bank? Do we have medical services and social services and counseling services available to us? And the third factor is our own internal strength. And many people think of resilience in terms of grit, determination, the will to survive, our perseverance.
Uh-huh.
But the neuroscientists have come along and said that resilience is really a capacity innate in our being because it's innate in our brains. It's a capacity of response flexibility. It's one of the functions of our prefrontal cortex, our center of higher executive functioning.
So you that allows say response, us, sorry, I just want you to repeat that. Response flexibility.
Response flexibility. That we're able to respond flexibly to whatever is happening. So we can perceive what's happening and be able to shift gears, shift perspective, see things from a different angle, see things from a bigger perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can do that, that's the platform for being able to behave in new ways, not the automatic survival responses that we have or have learned, but in new ways that are more effective and more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that we can work with our brains to wire in new patterns of responding to challenge or rewiring the old patterns that don't work so well anymore, that's a tremendous gift that we can choose experiences that will actually help strengthen the capacities of resilience in our brain.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about rewiring the brain. Let's just first talk about how it gets wired initially. Is this something that happens in our childhood?
So the brain learns and installs patterns and changes those patterns from experience, always. The brain is always learning from experience. And any experience we have, any experience, positive or negative, will cause neurons in the brain to fire. When we repeat the experience, those neural firings repeat. When we repeat them often enough, then the brain begins to build pathways and circuitry and installs that pattern of responding as a memory, as a habit. So yes, that's happening in our childhood from early on. And depending on the experiences we have and how our people around us see us coping, that if they see us as resilient or not, we will learn those tools of resilience and we'll learn that we are resilient. But when that doesn't happen or happen well enough as we're growing up, because the brain is plastic lifelong, even as adults, we can rewire the circuitry in the brain. So we can learn the tools that will help us do that now. We can make the choices that will help us do that now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the optimism and the encouragement comes in. We can make the choices that will create new habits or rewire the old ones. And when we choose to do that and repeat those practices over time, we're actually changing the brain so that we do better in our lives.
That's really exciting. Now, I just want to step back again into childhood. Can you give us an example of how somebody's wiring could go awry based on their experiences? What might get in the way of having healthy resilience being built into the neural pathways?
Okay, so when we're talking about childhood and the experiences that build the inner secure base of resilience, when a child gets startled and they reach out for help because that's the natural human biological response to something that's a distress or a danger, uh-huh. is to reach out for help. If the parent, the caregiver, responds with attention, with empathy, with understanding, with validation, with help, then the child learns that they can be effective at getting help. They're important. Uh-huh. They're learning behaviors that are skillful and valuable. And so that builds what's called secure attachment. But it really is the inner secure base of resilience. How that goes awry in two major directions. If a parent is not responsive, mm-hmm. if they're indifferent or neglectful, or if they're critical and judgmental and punishing of the child, then the child learns to kind of withdraw and mind their own business and, oh, I guess I have to do it all myself. Uh-huh. And so they develop a style of relating and regulating their emotions and responding to events in the world that can be very autonomous and very independent, but it can also be very rigid, not very flexible. Uh-huh. And people can get kind of defensive if something happens that they've not seen before or it doesn't fit their template of what they understand. It can be rejected. So there's not a lot of learning that can happen. And so it's what my colleague Bonnie Badnott calls neural cement. It's uh-huh. a kind of rigidity in our functioning, and we're not very flexible.
Right. So I'm thinking of some control freaks I've known and have been in my own way.
So what we would call being a control freak is someone perhaps who is frightened of the unknown, uh-huh. of not having control, not having mastery. And so they manage the fear. It's really managing the fear,
yes.
by trying to be in control. It's a survival response.
Right.
And there are times when it will work. There's times when it's golden. But if that's the only tool in the toolbox, then we don't have the response flexibility that we need, mm-hmm. to meet all situations.
Okay.
And then the other direction that this attachment business can go is if a parent is sometimes caring, but sometimes not, sometimes mm-hmm. absent, or sometimes even violent, when they're unpredictable and the child really can't figure out how to stay in connection, how to stay in the connection that they need to survive, they need the protection to survive, then the child winds up paying too much attention to the caregiver. Let me take care of you. Let me be who you need me to be,
yes.
so you'll take care of me. So there's an over-dependence on a caregiver, but not enough developing the sense of self so that mm-hmm. they know how to be resilient themselves.
Right.
So there's a kind of anxious style of relating to the world and responding to other people and responding to life events.
Right.
So that style, Bonnie calls, is neural swamp. It's mm-hmm. a little too chaotic. So there's learning that can happen, but it just kind of washes through like water through a sieve.
Sure.
So the idea of this resilience training is to become more flexible where we need to be, more stable where we need to be, so that we can go back and forth between being stable and being flexible. And when we have choices about how we respond, then that's when we can truly be resilient.
Mm.
I'll say one other thing.
Hold up that. We've got to go to commercial break. But when we return, more about how to develop this resilience. Stay tuned for more with Linda Graham here in just a few moments.
Are you ready to shift gears from spiritual seeker to spiritual rock star? Let Nova Whiteman be your aligning force that will help you navigate the ups and downs of this human experience. Tune in to Spiritual Alignment Radio with Nova Whiteman every second Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit NovaWhiteman.com. That's NovaWhiteman.com.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
We were born before the wind, also younger than the sun.
Yeah, the bonnie boat was one. Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I love that song, Benny. Absolutely love that.
Really?
I do.
I found a soft spot.
Okay. You did.
I will make a note of that.
I'm fascinated by this notion of resilience. And before we get into how to rewire the brain, so to speak, how to create new approaches so we can become more resilient, are there any other things in childhood that can happen that prevent us from having that wiring done so we can become resilient?
Yes, and thank you, Christine, for coming back to that. So it doesn't happen all the time, of course, but it does happen, that if a parent is disorganized, if a parent is in trauma, if a parent has unresolved grief, if a parent is violent or addicted, then the child experiences a lot of confusion and fear around the parent that they're supposed to be able to go to for help and for protection. And so the child develops themselves a disorganized style where they're not stable or flexible, they're kind of confused or paralyzed and can even go into a lot of dissociation. So there's been studies done now about what's called the adverse childhood experiences, the ACEs studies, that when a child experiences too much sexual trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma, neglect, if there's violence or addiction in the home or in the neighborhood, in the community, then the trauma that the child is experiencing, it's not their character, it's not their personality, but the trauma that the child is experiencing impacts the development of the brain. So they actually have less resources available to do the resilient coping or to even learn how to do the resilient coping. So when that happens, then a good trauma therapy is what's needed to help the person not only come out of the trauma and come into a strong, authentic sense of self again, but to kickstart the development of the brain so that it develops the capacities in the higher brain to be resilient. So it's just important to know that can happen.
You've talked about three different types of dysfunction that we can experience growing up as children. And after talking about all those different, you know, issues, it seems like we probably have a whole population where most people have not developed proper resilience.
I would say that people don't always have all the tools. They don't have all the capacities developed. That capacity is innate, and it can be recovered. So when I work with my clients, I don't say that they don't have resilience. I say they don't have the tools that they need to recover or strengthen their resilience.
Okay.
And so we work on using those tools.
Okay. So what are some of the tools?
Okay. So as you know, in the book, I organize the tools in the book Resilience. I organize the tools by five intelligences because that's how the brain develops and learns everything in the first place, from the bottom up.
Uh-huh.
So you begin with somatic, body-based intelligence, tools of breath and touch and movement and visualization, because that's how we're perceiving and responding to a sense of danger, a sense of threat, a sense of upset. And so we learn those tools of, you know, a deep sigh that resets the nervous system, the hand on the heart that brings calm to the nervous system again, juxtaposing a tense movement with a calm movement to bring the body more into its range of resilience and equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
So I start there with the clients because we really need to be in that sense of equilibrium, calm, steadiness in the present moment so that the higher brain can come back online and decide what we're going to do and how to deal with whatever we're going to do.
It's interesting, Linda, that you talk about sighing because it brought to my mind, back in the 1980s when I was facing the early stages of cancer and doctors had nothing to offer me and I was sort of in this, you know, dark night of the soul, I spent a week at an ashram. And I was kind of perplexed as I wandered around. The people who lived there generally were doing a lot of sighing. And I thought, this feels really strange. But by the end of the week, I was sighing as well, and it felt really good. What is it about the sighing that helps shift things within the body?
Okay, so when we breathe in, every time we breathe in, it activates the sympathetic branch of the nervous system. So we rev up, we activate a little bit, a lot, if we're scared and we're hyperventilating. Every time we breathe out, we're activating the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system. That's the calming branch. And so we're calming the body back down. You breathe in to activate, you breathe out to soothe.
Okay.
And that's the natural rhythm of the breath. You can activate the parasympathetic too much. You can calm down too much. You can literally faint.
Uh-huh.
But when we're in this regular rhythm, a sigh is simply breathing in, activating a little bit, and then exhaling deeply, calming down more. So you're actually resetting the nervous system, bringing it back into this balance. And we can do it intuitively. I teach my clients, anytime there is a moment of tension or frustration, to deliberately pair that with a sigh, to deliberately sigh in those moments.
Uh-huh.
And it helps reset the body brain.
Interesting. Okay, so you talked about somatic, and what's the next one?
Okay, so the next one is emotional intelligence, and it's really important because we experience emotions every moment of the day. We're constantly having an emotional message about our environment, our people environment, our physical environment. And so it's important to be able to be with and learn from those emotional messages rather than feeling hijacked or flooded by them, and rather than shutting down or pushing them away, trying to repress them, because it takes an enormous amount of energy to do that.
Okay, Linda, so I think that, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think that there are, there's a whole branch of people within the spiritual realm who think that they need to bypass the emotions. They think that the emotions are ego-based. What's the purpose of an emotion, and why should we pay attention to it?
Okay, so emotions are, they're actually sensations waving up from the body that say, something important is happening here, pay attention. That's the purpose of an emotion, is to get us to pay attention and then to take some wise action.
Okay.
So whether we're feeling anger, that might be a signal to protest a betrayal or an injustice.
Uh-huh.
If we're feeling sadness, that might be a signal to reach out and pull other people in for comfort and support. If we're feeling fear, it might be a signal to get away from something or someone that's dangerous or toxic. So even the emotions that we deem negative actually have a purpose. And when we can recognize and honor and be with that purpose, then we're more able to keep our brain online and decide what the wise action would be.
Okay. So it needs to be an acceptance and awareness, and then decide what the action is.
Right. So the acceptance, the awareness and the acceptance is what's really key. And one of the key protocols to be able to manage these difficult emotions is the mindful self-compassion that's been developed by Chris Germer and Kristen Neff, where we simply pause, put the hand on the heart because that calms down the body. Mm-hmm. May I be kind to myself in this moment? That breaks the interrupts the automaticity of whatever we're feeling. May I be kind to myself? I'm going ballistic here, but may I be kind to myself? I'm quaking in my boots, but may I be kind to myself? Mm-hmm. May I accept this moment exactly as it is?
Right.
May I accept myself exactly as I am in this moment?
Uh-huh.
Because when we accept ourselves, we shift out of the negativity and reactivity and contraction back out into a more open perspective. We back out into the larger picture. And then we can say, may I give myself all the compassion and courageous action that I need? But the research shows that when we practice compassion or any of the positive emotions, generosity, gratitude, joy, awe, delight, the direct measurable outcome of cultivating those emotions is resilience.
Interesting.
It shifts the functioning of the brain back out to the larger perspective where we can be more responsive rather than reactive.
And it's not just about directing it outward towards others. It's about also directing it towards ourselves.
Well, yes, we're managing our own internal emotional response to things so that we can then react to an outer situation or a person in a more skillful way. That also allows us to empathize with someone else's emotions without being carried away by them.
Right.
We can fully attend to what they're feeling, but not be carried away by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is fascinating. We're going to get into the other types of intelligence and more about resilience here. We're going to go to a quick break, but stay tuned for more with Linda Graham.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit SarahMaine.com.
Miss any shows during the week? Don't worry, we've got you covered.
Yahoo!
With the free Transformation Talk Radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand.
Yes!
Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
A
on the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm having a conversation today with psychotherapist Linda Graham. She is the author of a couple of books. Her latest book, which is hot off the presses, it got launched on Tuesday, is called Resilience: Powerful Practices for Bouncing Back from Disappointment, Difficulty, and Even Disaster. You know, Linda, I think that you've talked about the somatic intelligence, the emotional intelligence, and I know that you've got some other categories of intelligence. Can you share first about, like, how we can become more somatically intelligent? It's one thing I feel like we didn't really talk a lot about. Like, is it really about just breath, or is there another level of, like, accepting our physicality? Because it seems to me like as children, we love our bodies, but as adults, particularly for women, so much of us are disconnected from our bodies. Is there another step we can take beyond just like some of the exercises, the breathing and such?
So I think what's important that you're pointing to is as we use these tools of breath, touch, movement, and visualization, because the visualization allows us to access our own deep intuitive wisdom, mm-hmm. what happens is we begin to trust our bodies again. We begin to trust the wisdom of the body. We begin to listen to our gut instinct.
Uh-huh.
And that is a really, really crucial part of being resilient. Resilient doesn't start being in the head and doesn't involve only being in the head, though we use our higher brain, of course, to be resilient. But trusting the wisdom of the body is a huge part of being resilient.
That
and
makes
so that's
sense.
Why I offer these tools that are very benign, very simple,
uh-huh.
but getting people back in touch with their bodies and the wisdom of their bodies.
I love that, the trust in the body, and you're also talking about trust in the emotions and, you know, being aware,
mm-hmm.
accepting, and then figuring out from there, you know, what's the right course of action. Okay, so what's the third type of intelligence?
So the third is relational intelligence within ourselves, and of course that is cultivating the capacity to trust ourselves,
uh-huh.
to know what to do and to be resilient. So I teach tools of self-awareness and self-acceptance and self-appreciation.
Uh-huh.
One of the biggest tools are tools to rewire our relationship to the inner critic.
Mm.
Because the inner critic and the sense that we're a failure or we're a loser or we're not good enough
uh-huh.
is what derails our resilience. And so to tune down or rewire our relationship to that voice, which is so common in human experience,
right.
and come back into a sense of I can trust my intuition, I can trust my experience, I can trust my judgment,
mm-hmm.
I can trust myself as I navigate life as it changes.
Right.
So that chapter is really about relational intelligence within ourselves. And that's the base for being able to trust others and having relational intelligence with others.
Okay.
So when we feel safe and secure and trusting in ourselves, then we're more willing to take risks and reach out to other people to receive the help we need as a refuge, as a resource, and to offer that help to other people. And I try to identify some of the barriers that get in the way of our trusting other people and teach skills about negotiating change and setting limits and boundaries and repairing a rupture
uh-huh.
so that we can feel confident about ourselves as we relate to other people, and know when people are trustworthy and when they're not, when to back away, so that we actually are able to use people as the refuges and resources that they're meant to be.
So what are some of the barriers of like relating in that way to get support from others that get in our way of actually doing that, and how do we heal those?
So one of the exercises I offered about communicating without shame or blame. Because very often in any relationship, especially the more intimate it is, it's so easy to get caught in I'm right and you're wrong, uh-huh. or get caught in fear of, you know, being criticized or judged or ridiculed by the other person. And so I teach a specific tool to communicate with much more mindfulness, much more empathy, much more receptivity to listening, mm-hmm. so that it creates a safety within the couple or the coworkers or the friends. It yeah. creates a safety. And when the brain feels safe, it's much more open to learning. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the first barriers to overcome. And then the other one is to be able to negotiate change, to know exactly what would help uh-huh. in this situation. What can the other person do? What can I do? Taking responsibility for what I can do uh-huh. and being able to state those needs clearly so they have a chance of being met. So very practical, very basic, down-to-earth kind of tools.
So what happens when, for whatever reason, we've developed trust issues with others and trusting that we can get the support or the love that we need?
Well, if we've not received uh-huh. enough of that trust or safety coming along, then we're going to be wary. We may not trust our capacities to know if another person is trustworthy
right.
or not.
Oh, absolutely.
And we may not be able to discern whether they are or not. So a lot of the healing of that is being able to attune more carefully and accurately to what we're perceiving, what we're experiencing, what we're feeling.
Right.
And to be able to perceive accurately what the other person is feeling, what's driving them, what's uh-huh. motivating them,
yeah.
where are they really coming from. And so, again, that's drawing partly on the emotional intelligence, getting really skillful with our emotions, another person's emotions, so that we actually can communicate what we need and respond to what they need.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about one other type of intelligence. What is it?
It's the reflective intelligence of being able to, it's basically our mindfulness practice, being able to pause and become present and notice what's happening, notice our reactions to what's happening, being able to tolerate that is happening and uh-huh. step back from it, be able to observe it more, almost like you're up in the stands watching a basketball game being played down below, so that we're not caught up in the experience or in our reactions to the experience. And when we can be aware and accepting, then we can begin to discern what options might be available, what might be the consequences of our options. So we simply are able to be with our experience in a way that's steady, in a way that's equanimous,
uh-huh.
so that we can then begin to work with the tremendous capacities of the higher brain, our center of executive functioning, to plan, to discern, to make judgments, to take action.
Uh-huh.
And so now we're really making those choices, but it's been informed from everything that we've used, body-based, emotion-based, relational-based, from the bottom up to make wise choices. So, for instance, one of the tools that I teach is a way of being aware of how we're relating to something.
Mm-hmm.
And the exercise is simply change every should to a could. Because wow. very often we're listening to the language inside our own head. I should do this, I should do that, I shouldn't do this. And that leads to a kind of contraction. It leads to, oh, I better do it, or I'm a failure, or what if I don't do it perfectly? Whereas if we change the language we hear in our own head to I could,
mm-hmm.
it opens up the possibilities. And so rather than perfection, we're just simply aiming for opportunity and possibility. And that one simple awareness, catching ourselves when we say should and shifting it to a could, shifts how we're able to respond mm-hmm. to difficult events.
Yeah.
And so many of the reflective intelligence tools have that purpose, to notice what's happening, notice how we're reacting to what's happening, noticing whether that's working or not,
mm-hmm.
and being able to shift and discern a different possibility.
Yeah,
that's how I apply the reflective intelligence.
Right. So why is you offer something like 130 different exercises, different like approaches. They're most of them are really short and very doable. why are you offering people these exercises as opposed to just sort of explaining how things should work?
Okay, so going back to the brain learns from experience. The brain always learns from experience. Even when we think we're learning facts, the brain is creating the circuitry based on its experience. So that's why there are experiential exercises in the book. That is how the brain is going to change its pattern. And also, these exercises are short. They're meant to be repeated because the brain learns best little and often. A small experience repeated many times is how the brain can rewire itself the best.
Interesting.
So, right.
So short and sweet.
And then I'm also, there's a matrix in the book. So I offer tools based on, is this barely a wobble? Is this a real sorrow? Is this a trauma? Mm-hmm. I base it on, is this part of somatic intelligence or emotional intelligence? I base it on, this is new conditioning. You're putting a new pattern into your brain. This is reconditioning. You're rewiring an old pattern.
Uh-huh.
This is deconditioning. You're using your imagination and guided meditations, guided visualizations to access your own intuition, to access your own sense of possibility and creativity. It's another way of rewiring the brain. So all these different exercises plug in to that matrix one way or another, and people can find what's the easiest and the most useful for them.
Yeah, this is fascinating. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more here in just a few moments.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelm and stress? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath to signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is. Sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First, exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at louparadise.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Linda, this hour is flying by. Before we go any further, I want to make sure that our listeners have an opportunity to find their way to your website and to learn a little bit more about what you offer.
So the website is lindagraham-mfmary.net. I'm a marriage and family therapist, So lindagraham-mft.net. And what's archived on the website are many video interviews with other experts on resilience, sharing what's been helpful to them in recovering their own resilience. There are audio recordings of many of the exercises from the book. All the weekly resources for recovering resilience that I post every week are archived on the website. So there's many, many resources available. It's all free and easily downloadable. There's also a calendar of my upcoming trainings and webinars, because there's actually quite a lot being offered at this point, so it's easy to find out what and where someone can tune into that.
So you train both therapists and just individuals who want to learn more, right?
That's right. And you know what? Therapists are also individuals who want to learn more.
Absolutely,
so,
yes.
So we have a clinical training. Uh-huh. I'm finding that people are learning for themselves as human beings, as well as professionals who work with patients.
Right. Well, it helps to be a teacher when you walk your talk. So that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. Okay. So you've offered some valuable insight about how to develop resilience, especially if it has not been like pre-programmed into us, you know, growing up. Can you share an example of somebody who sort of used these approaches and become more resilient?
Okay, so I have my own story that I tell in the book. This is a true story. It's how it happened. So I do teach a lot. Mm-hmm. And last year I was teaching at Shivananda Ashram Yoga Retreat Center in the Bahamas. It was their 50th anniversary, so they've been there for a while.
Uh-huh.
So I flew cross country. I flew to the Bahamas. It was late. It was dark. I was tired. And I was supposed to step from the dock to the boat that would take me to the island.
Uh-huh.
And I missed the boat. So I went right into the ocean.
Oh, no.
And I, shock, I grabbed the boat. And I come back up. And the first thing is, I'm alive. That's the first thing. I'm alive. Second thing is, my backpack's on my back and my computer is in my backpack.
Uh-oh.
So 1 month before the manuscript for this book is due, I know that my computer is completely fritzed.
Oh, dear.
The third thing that goes through my mind is, but Linda, this is just data. This is just your computer. We've been through the fires here in Northern California. My home had not burned down. My business had not burned down. It was just my computer.
Right.
So I had a four-day laboratory of watching myself use these practices to be resilient. Uh-huh. I was teaching workshops on mindfulness and resilience and post-traumatic growth, but I was watching myself. And what I noticed is the first thing that had to happen was regulating my nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Just hand on the heart, deep breathing in the phrase, breathing in, I am alive, breathing out, I am home. Using my breath, using my hand on my heart to calm down my nervous system so that my higher brain could stay online and I could figure out how to deal.
Uh-huh.
Another way of coping was gratitude. I was very, very fortunate that a book in my luggage had not gotten one, and it was Gratitude Goulash by my friend Doug von Kuss. So I was reading gratitude
appropriate
every day.
Uh-huh.
My cell phone was also in the backpack, so I had no communication with my friends back home. But the community of people at the ashram dedicated to service and peace and love, so supportive, so generous, that I could reach out and find that sense of refuge. Mm-hmm. And resource, that safety net with other people. And then I'm using my mindfulness to watch, how am I coping? My tendency is to catastrophize. I see the worst in 3 seconds. And so what I had to do was make a list of everything that I had to do when I got back home Tuesday morning at 7:30 to take my computer in. I made the list, and then I parked it mm-hmm. in the future. There was nothing else I could do.
Right.
So that was the end of the catastrophizing. I made my list, and I knew it would be taken care of on Tuesday, and so I could spend the time teaching that I needed to spend.
So those emotions of panic and so on, and fear, you acted on that by creating that organized list. Love that.
Well, that's one way. I mean, I know that I can cope with anxiety and fear by getting busy, making a list, and feeling productive.
Uh-huh.
Yes, that is one way I have of coping with fear. But first, my hand on my heart and the deep breathing
and
the gratitude and pulling in the support of other people first.
Yes.
And then I made the list.
Uh-huh.
So as I'm going through these 4 days, I realize, oh, these practices work. I can make a list of the practices I was using that was helping me be resilient. But the main learning, so one of the things we learn in post-traumatic growth is that eventually you come to appreciate the learning that happened, not in spite of the event, but because of the event.
Right.
And because this happened the way it happened, I could see the lessons I was learning. And one of the biggest lessons is, oh, resilience is trainable.
Yeah.
I've been doing these practices for many years now, and it showed up the moment I needed them.
How perfect.
So that was the big lesson, that we can train resilience. It shows up when we need it.
Okay, Linda. So, I know that it was very stressful to lose the functionality of your computer and your phone. What about when we get to more extreme situations, such as the loss of a loved one, the loss of a child, something, the end of a marriage? What about the big things?
So we practice being able to meet the big things by doing the little things all along. So you're practicing your resilience, driving in traffic and getting your tax bill, so that those capacities, those skills are there when you get the IRS audit, or when you get a subpoena for a divorce, or when you get a cancer diagnosis, or when you lose a home because there's been a flash flood.
Right.
We're
right.
practicing all along. One of the biggest, okay, so when we have something really, really big like that, the first thing is to perceive and be aware and accept this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is happening. It's not to go into denial or distraction. It's this is it.
Right.
And being able to face what that is. We put hand on our heart, may I be kind to myself, but we face what's happening. And then we resource with other people, pulling in those resources of refuge and community.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's so important, and I mentioned this to you when we were off air, finding the positive, even in the midst of difficult times. And it's not a bypass. It is simply to give a breathing space, a respite from how hard it is, so that we can regroup and get strength again for the struggle. So it may be a warm cup of coffee. It may be the smile of a child. It may be playing with a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
It may be joshing around, as you and Benny were doing earlier.
Right.
Those moments of playfulness actually help us cope with the most difficult stuff. So it's important not to overlook that. And then we start to look for the lessons. What are the lessons here that I can learn? I mean, I learned to take my backpack off before I tried to get into the boat. But there's always lessons that we learn from any tragedy. And I had a very, very difficult rupture with a good colleague. The relationship experienced this rupture.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going through doing my own practices. And I get to this moment where I go, guess what? The lessons really are more important than the losses.
Uh-huh.
I'd accept that.
Right.
The lessons are more important than the losses. And then we come to the silver lining. You know, this is what I learned, and I wouldn't have learned it if this tragic event hadn't happened.
Yeah.
So there are many steps, many factors in coming through something that is truly traumatizing. But these are some of those steps.
Mm-hmm.
We pull in those resources and tools to get through really the worst stuff that could ever happen.
Yeah, and we all need it, because some of the worst stuff happens to all of us, it seems to me,
That's
loss
right.
of a pet, loss of a parent, loss of a job, end of a relationship. So these are great tools. Again, I want to mention the title of Linda's new book, Resilience, Powerful Practices for Bouncing Back from Disappointment, Difficulty, and Even Disaster. And her website is lindagraham-mft.net. I'm going to spell that out for you guys. lindagraham-mft.net. Linda, it's been a fascinating conversation today, and I think that the exercises in your book seem really beneficial. I've tried many of them, and I know that there's an abundance of them. And I thank you for sharing this valuable information, not only the approaches, but also the science to back it up. And I want to thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me, Christine. I've really enjoyed our talk.
And thank you for joining us here today. If you want to share this show, go to ChristineUpchurch.com under the radio shows. Should be up by Monday at the latest, and you'll be able to share it freely. Also, please check out my blogs, check out my TEDx talk, and hang in there, folks. It's great to have you here, and it's great to have you on the planet. So talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.